This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
For Joel Armia. Armia sends it ahead, shorthanded. Armia with Tanev. Armia toe drag. Scores! Joel Armia, who had four shorthanded goals last year, gets his first of the season, and it is a shorty. Ryder, Morrow giving chase at the line. Shot blocked in front. Back door. Score! Or does Mason have it? Mason has it underneath him.
He's got it.
Matt Zuccarello does not believe it.
We have a trade to announce. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. And as I said off the top, we have a trade to announce. This news breaking about 25 or so minutes ago. The Winnipeg Jets have traded goaltender Steve Mason, restricted free agent Joel Armia, a seventh-round pick in the 2019 NHL Draft, and a fourth-round pick in the 2020 NHL Draft to the Montreal Canadiens in exchange for defenseman Simon Bourque. Now, you're probably saying, who is Simon Bourque? And you wouldn't be wrong to be saying that. Simon Bourque is a 21-year-old defenseman who played last season with the Laval Rocket in the AHL. He's more of a depth defenseman, probably for the Manitoba Moose more than anything else. Highly unlikely, based on his career trajectory to this point, that he's going to make an impact or a significant impact with the Winnipeg Jets.
You know, just a quick note, Drew, on Simon Bourque. I agree with you. I don't think anyone's expecting Bourque to step into the Jets lineup next year, but he was a point-per-game defenseman in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League his last year. So he does have some offensive ability.
Sure.
But I agree, he probably will be a Moose player.
Yes, more than likely a Moose player. But what the Winnipeg Jets get out of this trade is what they've been searching for pretty much, well, since the end of the season, which is some cap space, some cap relief, by getting rid of the Steve Mason contract, which is $4.1 million, and what Joel Armia was due to get as a restricted free agent, in and around probably $1.5 million or $2 million a season. The Winnipeg Jets get some much-needed salary cap space, logically, to potentially sign pending unrestricted free agent Paul Stastny to a new contract. So one more time, I'm going to recap the trade, and then we'll talk about it. The Winnipeg Jets have traded goaltender Steve Mason, forward Joel Armia, a seventh-round pick in the 2019 draft, and a fourth-round selection in the 2020 draft to the Montreal Canadiens in exchange for defenseman Simon Bourque, the Jets getting some much-needed cap space in their quest to re-sign Paul Stastny and in their quest to sign a whole lot of other restricted free agents that they have on their books.
Let the frenzy begin, boys.
Less than 24 hours, or about 24 hours, until free agency frenzy begins. Canada Day, of course, coverage here on TSN 1290.
I thought it started with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
well,
Drew.
It more or less did, as it happened.
We're frenzies.
We're frenzied? You're in a frenzy already?
Totally.
The Jets, let's talk about the move from the Jets' perspective. Obviously, they get that much-needed space. Steve Mason was the big signing last year on July 1st. Things obviously didn't work out well. The Jets, given the play of Connor Hellebuck this season, don't have a need for a $4.1 million backup goaltender. They need cap space. The cost of the Montreal Canadiens eating that contract is Joel Armia, a restricted free agent who, of course, came over to the Winnipeg Jets in the Evander Kane, Zach Bogosian trade, which also saw Tyler Myers and Drew Stafford come here. That was a few years ago. Quick first glance, Ezra Ginsberg, your thoughts on this deal from the Winnipeg Jets' perspective.
Well, it's pretty clear, guys. You mentioned it, Drew. I mean, the Jets are clearing cap space here so they can sign Paul Stastny. And you got to think that the Paul Stastny contract is going to be probably 4 years, 3 years, maybe 5 years, but it's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $5.5 million a year, $6 million a year, and Joel Armia unfortunately becomes a casualty of this situation. And you know, we have to say Joel Armia obviously was part of the Evander Kane trade. He has been a very good Winnipeg Jet. You know, has the ability to play on the penalty kill. You know, he's been a guy that's played on the third line, the second line. He's been mainly a bottom six forward. But when you look at this trade, it makes a lot of sense. And now a big question has to be, who is going to be the Jets' backup goaltender next year behind Connor Hellebuyck? Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be Eric Comrie. There always is the possibility that the Jets do acquire a goaltender on a 1 or 2 year contract, a veteran backup goaltender. There are some names out there. Obviously, you know, some of the names are being scooped up. Jonathan Bernier, he's going to sign with the Detroit Red Wings. Carter Hutton, he's going to sign with the Buffalo Sabres. I don't think the Jets would be in on Carter Hutton, Drew.
No.
But the point is, right now, on the depth chart, Eric Comrie becomes the Jets' backup goaltender unless you go out and you sign another goaltender. So this makes a lot of sense. Steve Mason obviously didn't work out last year with the Winnipeg Jets, and a lot of that had to do with the injury problems, the concussions and all that. And right now, it becomes a numbers game. He's making $4 million a year. Connor Hellebuck's going to be signed to another contract. You got to think that that's going to be a significant raise on what he was making this year. So right now, in order to sign Paul Stastny, you had to clear up cap space. And for the Jets, Steve Mason and Joel Armia make the most sense. Joel Armia is what enticed the Montreal Canadiens to take Steve Mason's contract. Mm-hmm. You have to throw something else in, right?
Yeah.
And there are rumors out there that the Habs are going to flip Steve Mason. They're not going to keep him.
Dave, is the price of Joel Armia worth it for the Winnipeg Jets to get out from under the contract of Steve Mason with 1 year left?
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. I mean, it's unfortunate, but the truth is, I mean, Joel Armia, I think, had 12 goals for the Jets last year and 17 assists. So, I mean, he was a serviceable player, but I mean, is he a replaceable player? I think so. And I think that if you're from a Jets perspective, especially if you know that Paul Stastny is willing to sign in Winnipeg, which is the reports we've been getting all week now, is that, and I had something up on the website yesterday about that. It just seems that it's more and more things returning in the Jets' favor in terms of retaining the very talented center to play with Nikolaj Ehlers and Patrick Laine. So if that was the case, you had to do something. And you know, there's a price to making that move, and the price comes at Joel Armia's expense. But again, I think the Jets have the assets to retain, to replace, sorry, what Joel Armia brings to the table. I like Joel Armia, but I think you can replace him.
It's worth noting that Jesperi Kotkaniemi, who was the first-round pick of the Montreal Canadiens at the NHL draft, is from the same hometown as Joel Armia, and apparently they're friends. So from the Montreal Canadiens' perspective, that adds another reason why they'd be interested in acquiring Armia. It helps with the transition of Kotkaniemi into the NHL and into the Habs lineup.
And Drew, make no mistake, Joel Armia is a huge part of this trade, especially mm-hmm. if they flip Steve Mason to another team for a draft pick or a prospect or another player. And as you know, Armia is coming off of a career year with the Jets, and he was also good in the playoffs, even though he obviously didn't play all the games. He was dealing with an injury for part of the playoffs, but he's been a very valuable player for Paul Maurice and the Jets. And for the Habs, you got to think that he slots right into a third-line wing role.
That's what you would think. I mean, he's going to have a greater opportunity with the Habs to probably play higher in the lineup than he necessarily did with the Jets, given that the Habs have a bit of a dearth of talent. It's a logical move. I mean, it just makes sense. You give up a guy that in Joel Armia that is expendable, given the amount of depth that you have in your forward group. Maybe this opens up an opportunity for a guy like Nick Petan to come up from the Manitoba Moose, who's performed well at the AHL level, hasn't really performed well at the NHL level as of yet. Now, certainly Joel Armia and Nick Petan play two very different games, and Joel Armia was more responsible as a two-way player than Nick Petan was. But this gives an opportunity. It removes a bit of a log jam, and it just seems like this. Okay, if you'd said to most Jets fans that it's going to cost you something to get out from Steve Mason's contract, and it's going to cost you an asset, and that asset is Joel Armia, but the reward is Paul Stastny, most people would probably have been okay with that trade-off, because it logically makes sense from the Winnipeg Jets' perspective.
Right. The cost for me really is more so Joel Armia. Obviously, you know, Steve Mason only spends a year with the Jets organization, but it's the contract that you're trying to free up. As you mentioned, I think most Jets fans are going to be happy if the Jets are able to re-sign Paul Stastny, and all indications are right now that the Jets are going to sign Paul Stastny to a multi-year contract. I think Jets fans would be happier to have Stastny than Mason as a backup goaltender. And also, they would rather have, if you're looking at it like Mason and Armia versus Stastny, I think Jets fans would rather have the second-line center, right? That was so good with Patrick Laine and Nikolaj Ehlers. So I agree, Drew. This trade makes a lot of sense here. And I think when you consider that you have players like Mason Appleton in the AHL, you have players like Nick Patan, as you mentioned, in the AHL. Mm-hmm. You have a player like Jack Roslovic, who played half of the season with the Jets, but he was kind of the 13th forward in the playoffs there. I think we'd all agree Jack Roslovic is going to be a full-time forward for the Jets next year. Whether that's at center or wing remains to be seen. I would expect him probably, Dave, to start off as a winger, even though he's a natural center. But when you consider also Christian Vesalainen, I think we'd expect him to play some significant time with the Moose.
Mm-hmm.
But Appleton, Vesalainen, Patan, I mean, there are a lot of players that are pushing for spots with the Jets right now.
You're absolutely right. And, I mean, I think coming into this, everybody acknowledged that the Jets were going to have to move some salary if they were going to be able to get Paul Stastny under contract. There was no question about that. The numbers just didn't really work out in their advantage otherwise. And the names that you'd heard before, a guy like Matthew Perreault, a guy like even maybe, you know, Brian Little, to have it end up being Steve Mason and Joel Armia as the cost to be able to afford to re-sign Paul Stastny is a lot more palatable than taking a guy like Perreault out of your lineup. And, you know, Matthew Perreault has his pros and his cons, but from an analytics perspective, he's an analytical darling in what he does for possession. And, you know, he's more offensively talented than a guy like Joel Armia, whose, you know, impact was significant on the Jets, and he was a quality player for them, but probably is more easily replaced than a guy like Matthew Perreault with that offensive upside would have been.
Right, and, you know, it's nice for Joel Armia. He goes to a team where he is going to get more of an offensive role, because we know the Montreal Canadiens had all types of problems scoring goals last year. So I don't think Joel Armia is necessarily going to step onto the top line with Jonathan Drouin, but I wouldn't be surprised if he gets second power play time. And on a team like the Winnipeg Jets, you know, one of the best offensive teams in the league, he just wasn't getting that opportunity. You're not going to put Joel Armia out on the first power play unit. I mean, he's going to kill penalties, yep, and he's going to play on the third or fourth line. So for Joel Armia, he goes to a great situation. And as you mentioned, I mean, the Habs, even though they missed the playoffs last year, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, third overall, he's obviously, you know, going to be a couple of years away from being an impact player. But I don't think the Montreal Canadiens are done here either. We hear Ryan O'Reilly has been a target of theirs. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the Habs have one or two more players to sign here.
From the Habs' perspective, they get an asset. They get a guy who will make their rookie draft pick more comfortable. They use their salary cap space that they had in order to, you know, to help out another team. They get a couple draft picks as a result. From the Habs' perspective, it's a very logical move. From the Jets' perspective, you're going to miss Joel Armia to some degree, but too often, Joel Armia was, when he was noticeable, he was very noticeable, but when he wasn't noticeable, he was sort of invisible and he didn't have any impact on the game. And I would say that there were too many nights when he maybe wasn't as impactful as he should be, especially for a guy who was a former first-round selection.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, Joel Armia is a very highly skilled player, and that was maybe why Buffalo included him in the Evander Kane, Tyler Myers, all the other players trade, because of that fact that, you know, Armia was a guy maybe that they saw his offensive upside being a little bit limited. But he scored 12 goals this year, and it's not like he played big-time minutes for the Jets. We mentioned he wasn't getting a lot of power play time.
Right.
So I think Armia, you know, how old is he, 22, 23 years old? I could see Armia scoring 15, 17 goals in the NHL for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm not denigrating him, but just from the Jets' perspective, he didn't really...
He's 25, sorry.
25, yeah. He just really didn't fit what the Jets needed anymore, or he was a reasonable cost to get out of the Steve Mason contract.
And the Jets didn't retain any salary.
Well, that's the big part.
Which is, of course, the biggest key and the biggest indication as to why they made this move, is because they knew that they could get rid of Steve Mason's deal. They'll bring someone in. They're going to have to pay Connor Hellebuyck, which they knew.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be paying two goalies almost $10 million. I'm not saying Connor Hellebuck's making that kind of money, but I'm saying, like,
not too far off, though.
It's going to be a lot, so it makes no sense. So they'll bring someone in at a lot cheaper. You know, I don't think it'll be Michael Hutchinson, but I think they're going to bring somebody in, and it'll be a lot cheaper, and it'll be someone who can back up Connor Hellebuyck.
And a guy that makes a lot of sense to me, even though it looks like there's a good chance he signs with the Chicago Blackhawks, is Cam Wirt.
Yeah, I mean, a veteran backup, certainly.
What about Eddie Lack?
Well, Eddie Lack has had his struggles.
I'm aware, but you only need a backup.
I know, but you need a backup who can play, you know, in terms of as a... Well, I'll tell you what. Let's go to break.
The Jets do lack a backup right now.
Oh, very good. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the backup situation. We'll talk about the Jets re-signing of Joe Morrow after they didn't give him a qualifying offer. Much more to come. The big news of the morning, of course. Steve Mason and Joel Armia on their way to Montreal. The Jets get some much-needed salary cap space. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live. Live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
For Shoveldayoff, even to get Paul Stastny at a bargain rate of, say, $5.5 million, you know, he'll get more on the open market. He's going to have to move bodies out. I think he's willing to part with the likes of Steve Mason, maybe Perreault, maybe one of the key defensemen, depending on how things go in the Jacob Trouba negotiation. But in saying all that, as we have this conversation today, he doesn't have the space.
I'm going to introduce a...
The Jets have the space now. Earlier today, about 40 or so minutes ago, they traded Steve Mason and Joel Armia to the Montreal Canadiens in exchange for AHL defenseman Simon Bourque. The Jets also threw in a 2019 seventh-round draft pick and a 2020 fourth round draft pick. So the Jets now have that cap room necessary to get a deal done, if there's a deal to get done, with pending unrestricted free agent Paul Stastny. Seems like that's the natural progression to this move. What does it mean for the Jets? Let's assume that they get Stastny under contract. What does it mean for the Jets to have a center depth of Scheifele, Stastny, Little, Lowry?
I think they probably have, if not the best center depth in the NHL, Drew, they're probably at the very least top five, top three. The Jets were a top team in the NHL before they acquired Paul Stastny at the trade deadline, right?
Mm-hmm.
After they acquired Paul Stastny, they were almost unbeatable, and they ended up going all the way to the Western Conference Final. And I still think they should have beat Vegas, but obviously Marc-Andre Fleury and Vegas were pretty hot at that time. But Brian Little as your third-line center, when he could easily be your second-line center, gives you so many options. And we talked about Jack Roslovic. I mean, people forget, Jack Roslovic is a natural center.
Sure.
So you have the ability to play Roslovic at center. You also have the ability to move a guy like Matthew Perreault to center.
Andrew Kopp is also a natural centerman as well.
Exactly. So I really believe that this was the priority for the Jets before they have to sign guys like Connor Hellebuck and Jacob Trouba and Josh Morrissey. This was priority number one. Let's make sure that we get Paul Stastny under contract, because we know that Paul wants to be here, and we know how well he played. He waived his no-move clause to come to Winnipeg. We know the story. He has the history with Blake Wheeler. And I think the most important thing, Dave, is that the Jets were having difficulty finding someone to play with Nikolaj Ehlers and Patrick Laine. Paul Stastny is that guy.
No, absolutely, and I think that was the key. I think Brian Little is your third-line center. You know, despite the fact that his contract kicks in and you've got six more years of him now, the fact of the matter is that he didn't really mesh as well as Paul Stastny has with Ehlers and Laine. And I think that it's just become a natural fit. And not to have to lose your depth scoring, like to have Matthew Perreault still in the lineup, to have all of these guys, really, to have your team and to be able to include guys like, you know, Kyle Connor still on his last year of his ELC, I think, and you've got Jack Roslovic who has two more years of his ELC. So you've got some guys who are, you know, who offer a little affordability in this lineup still, whereas, you know, because you know you're going to have to free up that money for the defense, for Patrick Laine eventually. So right now you're okay. I mean, how long a deal do they want to offer Paul Stastny? I don't know, because the truth is I think that the Jets are viewing this as an opportunity to win right now. Well, so they're in win now mode. I mean, and that part of that is, I mean, this, the only reason you do this is to win now. You don't do this to say, hey, Paul Stastny, we're signing you to win in 2 years. This is a move for the Jets to win the Stanley Cup this year.
Dave, you got to think it's 3 to 5 years. And I realize that's, you know, a bit of a range, but the number that makes sense to me is probably 4 years.
Certainly that's what the Jets would like. I mean, Paul Stastny probably does get more on the open market. you know, given that teams, you know, when the players hit July 1st, they don't seem to necessarily shy away from giving guys, even in their early 30s, you know, 5-, 6-, 7-year contracts, whether or not they should or shouldn't. I mean, is a separate issue altogether.
Andrew, obviously, if the Jets do end up signing Stastny to a 3-year deal,
yeah,
he's going to be making a little bit more on the AAV, right? So maybe if it's a 3-year deal, he's getting $6 million a year, whereas if it's a 5-year deal, maybe it's a $5.5 million a year AAV.
Well, and my suspicion would be it would be a shorter term with more money, and the reason for that is because you're thinking to yourself, again, what's the window? And you know, the reality, again, is that you have to re-sign Blake Wheeler if you want.
Yep.
And you're going to have to give Kyle Connor a big contract upgrade. You're going to have to give Jack Roswick potentially a contract. You're going to already at that time be paying probably a bazillion dollars to Patrick Laine.
I think Chevy Dave is going to start to feel like Oprah pretty soon. You get a new contract. You get a new contract. You get a raise. You get $7 million a year. You get $9 million a year.
No, it's a good point, Ez, and I think that that's exactly what we're about to see. I think that a lot of these guys are going to get big bumps, and you know, we aren't, you know, unfortunately we don't have the time right now because we literally were driving here while the trade broke.
The trade... We literally heard about the trade in the Tim Hortons drive-thru.
Yeah, well, I figured as much. Your Timbit order got a real... We'll take a dozen Timbit... Whoa!
Yes, yeah. I was looking down at my phone and...
I like to conduct all my business in drive-thrus, by the way.
I saw the breaking news and I was like... I said to Ez, I'm like, of course, I'm not near a computer to be able to update illegalcurve.com. But fear not, folks. Remotely on mobile, I...
You really are the hero today, Dave.
Well, I didn't want to say that.
I know.
Dave runs the internet.
Exactly. I mean, let's talk about the other transaction the Jets had this week.
Yes.
That was Joe Morrow.
Yep.
They signed Joe Morrow to a 1-year, $1 million contract.
Montreal Canadiens connection again.
Yes, after they acquired him from the Habs at the trade deadline.
Chevy and Mark Bergevin have a nice little trading thing going here.
They certainly do have a relationship back and forth, clearly, at this point in time, in terms of
they
feel comfort in making trades with one another. What about Morrow for 1 year, $1 million? The Jets chose not to make him a qualifying offer, which initially raised my eyebrows. But then I thought, okay, you know, so the Jets don't qualify him, but you know, then they'll sign him to a. I thought it was going to be a multi-year deal, like a 2-year deal.
Well, the reason
with a
they
little
didn't
bit of a little bit of a raise,
right? And the reason why they didn't qualify him is to avoid having to pay him more in arbitration.
But first of all, does he have an arbitration case that's going to give him more than $1 million?
Scored a big goal in the playoffs.
Okay, he scored one big goal in the playoffs.
If I was his agent, I would just show that goal 100 times.
No, like, but I mean, clearly. Clearly,
I'm kidding, obviously.
Yeah.
But, I mean, after he was acquired by the Jets, we thought that Joe Morrow was kind of going to be that 7th or 8th defenseman, right? Because you had Toby Enstrom ahead of him on the depth chart. You had Dmitry Kulikov and Josh Morrissey on the left side ahead of him. And Joe Morrow ended up stepping in and being a pretty good darn defenseman for the Jets.
Yeah, he certainly was. And I thought the acquisition of Morrow for a 4th-round selection was more than worth it.
He's probably your third pairing defenseman right now. I think he's past Ben Sherratt on the depth chart.
You think he's ahead of Ben Sherratt?
So
you think the Jets are going Morrissey, Kulikov, Morrow?
I think so.
As opposed to Morrissey, Kulikov, Sherratt?
Right, and then you also have Sammy Niku in there. And I realize there are a lot of fans. I think there's someone that has like a Twitter account that's called Sammy Niku Lifelong Fan Account or something. And don't get me wrong. I mean, Dave is the Moose insider. He'll tell you how good Sammy Niku is for a 2015 7th-round draft pick. But I don't think anybody's expecting Sammy Niku to step right into the NHL next year ahead of guys like Dmitry Kulikov and Joe Morrow.
My point is, when they didn't qualify him, and I understood the logic of not wanting to go to arbitration, I thought they were going to be more in the market of a 2-year, you know, $1.6 million contract, like $800,000 a year.
Right.
When the number came out at $1 million for 1 year, I thought it was a little higher than I expected. But, I mean,
if
you're paying Ben Sherratt $1.4 million, isn't Joe Morrow worth one?
I think
Morrow's better than Sherratt.
Well, I mean, you've made that argument quite succinctly so far. I would agree that, you know, that you think that Morrow has surpassed Sherratt.
I like Ben Sherratt, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, the Jets should trade Ben Sherratt. Ben Sherratt's a good, solid defensive defenseman. He can lay the body checks and all of that. I just think if you're between Joe Morrow and Ben Sherratt, I think if you're Paul Maurice, you probably prefer Morrow because he's got a higher offensive upside and his skating is better.
His skating is better. I mean, I just thought the $1 million surprised me. I mean, it's not. I mean, we're splitting hairs here. I mean, I thought it was going to be more around $800,000 or $850,000. So maybe it's $100,000 more than I expected it to be.
Your calculator's broken.
My calculator's broken. Obviously, my finger was not quite on the pulse.
Using an abacus and he doesn't know how to use it.
That's true. So my numbers are way off, as it were. In any event, the Jets, you know, the take. care of two big pieces of business in that they set up the cap space. They get the cap space in trading out Steve Mason and trading out Joel Armia. Does that lead to the Paul Stastny signing? That's what the expectation is, at least in this room, that the Jets have to feel that they're very close to getting a deal done with
Paul
Stastny.
I think there's no doubt that Paul Stastny is signing with the Jets.
There's always doubt until you have his name on paper is what I'm going to say.
Stastny signing with the Jets.
So you are 100% confident.
It's a guarantee, especially with this contract, this cap room that's been now traded to the Montreal Canadiens. I thought a couple of days ago that it was certain that Paul Stastny was signing with the Jets, but it's pretty clear, guys. You don't move out Steve Mason and Joel Armia unless you're prepared to sign Paul Stastny.
Unless you have a deal pretty much
done. Or if
it's
imminent, yeah.
Well, we'll see. Maybe it'll be hopefully in the next 2.5 hours before we're off air. And, of course, free agency coverage tomorrow starting at 10 a.m. here on the station with Paul Edmonds and Ryan Brandt. They'll bring you everything on the free agent frenzy as it gets underway on Canada Day, as it does each and every year. Speaking of Paul Edmonds, he's going to join us next. We'll preview free agency. We'll talk about the Jets' big move from earlier today. Much more to come on the transactions by the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Alongside Dave Minuch and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend. You know him as the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290. Paulie Edmonds, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, gentlemen. Drew, did you plan it this way? Did you and Chevy have some conversations last night? Mark Bergevin involved as well. And you said, listen, I got a three-hour program tomorrow. Can you guys kind of stir this thing up?
Yeah, you know, well, those of us in the Illuminati always look out for one another. So we just, you know, I sent him a little text message and he was able to pull it off for us. I thought it was very kind of him.
Well, I think it was in the works, but you just got it expedited, right?
That's just right. I mean, yeah. He saw Saturday morning, well, the IC guys are going to ramble incoherently otherwise, so we really need to get him some content.
No, this is pretty exciting here this morning. I think that you guys have broken down for a half hour. This opens up a lot of doors. And another real good move by Chevy is the general manager of the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, there was no buyout required, and I don't know if they were considering that with Steve Mason, but they felt like they obviously, and I think the public knew that the Jets had to clean some space off their cap if they wanted to bring Paul Stastny back. Plus, I mean, they had $24 million at that point, but most of that was going to be allocated toward other players like, well, Connor Hellebuck and Adam Lowry and Morrissey and Trouba. So it was going to eat up a lot of that. But if you wanted to get Stastny done, you needed to get some space, and they've found about $4 million of that, and plus what they were going to save on Joel Armia is an RFA around $1 million. So you could probably look at it as being about $5 million off your cap. And that can probably now be earmarked toward Paul Stastny. And we'll see if that domino falls over the next 24 hours here. But, you know, another shrewd move. And it looks to me like Montreal is probably going a little bit more on the youth movement. They were able to absorb Steve Mason. Now there's $14 million in earnings going to two goaltenders there in Montreal, so that's quite a bit. But don't forget that if they continue with the youth movement, as I think that they are, then Max Pacioretty is going to come off the books at some point, and that $4.5 million will kind of free up some space there as well. But it appears, finally, that Montreal has some direction, and it looks like they're into a bit of a reload or a rebuild phase.
And it sounds like Steve Mason isn't going to be long for Montreal. They're already shopping his contract, if you believe the reporting that we've seen so far this morning on Twitter. Paulie Edmonds, our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Paul, now that they've made this space, do you think that, I mean, it's obviously not a conclusion, but do you think that the odds are certainly looking in the Jets' favor that they get a contract done with Paul Stastny as a result?
Well, I think whether they do or they don't, they had to get some breathing room. You can't negotiate into something where you just can't take that final step, right, guys? Mm-hmm. I mean, the agent sees it, the player sees it through that trickle-down through the agent, and they would say, well, are you kicking tires here? Because it doesn't look like you've got any room on the salary cap. What are you going to do with the guys, the aforementioned guys that we talked about, as they start to get signed here? Is there any room left? And You know, so I think that what this does is it frees up the space so that you can take that final step. You can go into negotiations knowing that you can get this player, that you've got the room and you have the salary and the financial means to do so. So, yes, I think it does do that. That doesn't mean that, again, when John Tavares finally signs with somebody, and it could be the New York Rangers or it could be the other five suitors, that there will be that trickle-down effect. And if you are in the market for John Tavares, and this kind of excludes the Winnipeg Jets out of this, and you don't get him, well, maybe you look at a Paul Stastny as your secondary option. Now, John Tavares is a player that you plug in the middle for sure, and he's an elite player, top five in the league for sure. So if you want to get him, there's a myriad of reasons why you're going to get him and what he's going to bring. But you're also looking to add to your depth chart. And if you don't get him, then somebody else has to go and move into that spot if you desperately seek somebody in the middle. So now this gives the Winnipeg Jets some leverage to go out and to shop the opportunity of Paul Stastny being a Winnipeg Jet for a multiple series of years here. I don't think that you would go anything less than two or three with Paul Stastny based on his age. You want him for a couple more years while the window's still open here. So I think it does do that, Drew, for sure. It gives them some wiggle room on the cap for sure to sign those players and also bring in Paul Stastny. Otherwise, guys, I'll tell you right now, there is a huge hole between Mark Scheifele and Brian Little on the depth chart for the Winnipeg Jets, and that's that number two center. And I don't know that Jack Roslovic can be plugged in to play with Nikolaj Ehlers and Patrick Laine just yet. I don't know that Brian Little wants to play with those two guys and is quick enough to do that, continuing as he gets into his 30s now and 31 years old. So there's a definite spot and a need for the Winnipeg Jets for a number two center, and to watch Paul Stastny walk away by not trying to get him to come back and free up that cap space, I think would have been an egregious error by the Winnipeg Jets. But they've had these dominoes fall in the right direction to put them in a position of negotiation with him to try to get him to re-sign here in Winnipeg.
Paulie, now that the Jets have moved Steve Mason to the Montreal Canadiens, does Eric Comrie finally get that full-time backup role? Do you expect the Jets to sign a veteran backup goaltender, like maybe a Kari Lehtinen, or maybe is Michael Hutchinson still a possibility for the Jets next year?
Well, I think it's the latter. I think that you are probably going out to get somebody with some more miles, NHL miles on them, than maybe vaulting somebody up from the American Hockey League. It allows you to do that. Let's not forget that Michael Hutchinson now is a free agent, or will be, as of tomorrow. I don't anticipate the Winnipeg Jets signing him unless, of course, they feel that there's only one option, and that's to bring him back. I'm sure that Michael is trying to shop himself for a better opportunity and maybe an opportunity to play a little bit more than being mired in the American Hockey League. I don't know that Eric Comrie is ready to assume that backup role just yet. So I think that there's probably an opportunity for the Winnipeg Jets to go out and get somebody with some veteran experience as a backup to Connor Hellebuck. So I think that that's probably the option. You need some goaltending depth here as well. If Hutchinson's out the door, you didn't qualify Jamie Phillips, so he's out the door. So you need a little bit more, and I know that they drafted a goaltender at the past draft last weekend, but, I mean, that kid's probably 2 years away from being 2 years away, as they say. So you need probably a little bit more goaltending depth here, so I wouldn't be surprised if the corresponding move to Steve Mason being moved out to Montreal with no buyout and no retention of salary is that the Winnipeg Jets will go out and get somebody probably on the cheap with a little bit more NHL experience to back up Connor Hellebuck this season.
Paul, one of the other pieces in the move was Joel Armia, and he's carved himself a nice little niche, shorthanded specialist, played a little PK. Who do you see jumping up and filling his role for the Jets?
Well, first off, David, I don't think you get the deal done without kind of sweetening the pot to Montreal without throwing somebody like Joel Armia in. I think the Winnipeg Jets like the fact that Joel Armia was trending in the right direction. 10 goals 2 years ago, 12 goals for a career high this year, and he was only going to be around $1 million. So what's next? 15 goals for $1 million? That's pretty good in terms of your return on investment. So I think that they probably parted with Joel Armia because they had to, and he was one of the guys that was requested. So they're going to miss him, as you mentioned, in that shorthanded role for sure, and the ability to probably play up and down the lineup as Joel has that big body and skating ability and stick handling. I think that most of us are always kind of looking for a little bit more from Joel. So who steps up? Not quite sure, but I would tell you that it certainly opens up an opportunity for a Jack Roslovic full-time now, not that he didn't push his way in last year. What about a Brendan Lemieux? Is he knocking at the door? I think what this does, and you follow the Manitoba Moose as close as anybody does in the media and in the fandom for sure, Dave, I think this opens up an opportunity for somebody else to push their way into the National Hockey League from the AHL this year, from within. And whether that becomes a Marco Dano getting a little bit more time, I'm not sure. But I think that you're probably looking at somebody a little bit more younger kind of coming up from the AHL that had a good year last year. So it opens up a spot for sure. But I think reluctantly the Winnipeg Jets moved Joel Armia, but they had to because that was the piece that was hinging on Montreal taking the salary and this salary dump of Steve Mason.
Paul Edmonds, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the news of the morning, which saw the Jets trade goaltender Steve Mason and forward Joel Armia, as well as two middle to late round draft picks in both 2019 and 2020 to the Montreal Canadiens. It's basically a pure salary dump. In return, the Jets get Simon Bourque back from the Habs. He's an AHL defenseman. Paul, if the Jets are able to get Paul Stastny under contract, where would you consider a centerman depth of Scheifele, Stastny, Little among the best in the NHL?
Probably just that. I mean, that's a pretty good one. You talk about a 1-2 punch. That's a 1-2-3 punch. And let's not disregard the role that Adam Lowry plays. I mean, Adam's played third and fourth line center, a lot of third line center, but now down to fourth line center, and the ability to win faceoffs certainly kills some penalties. The big body that he is that they sometimes utilize in front of the net or around the net on the power play, and the fact that he can go in and get the puck, move the puck, and plays pretty well with wingers that have been on his side or on his flank, so whoever that might be, interchangeable wingers, I think there's a real value there as Winnipeg is probably as strong as it gets up the middle with those four guys, if including Stastny is here, of course. But it's a pretty good 1-2-3-4 punch, I would say, for the Winnipeg Jets. As good as it gets in the National Hockey League when you have that kind of depth, presumably, of course, with Stastny maybe re-signing with the Jets.
Paulie, we got to plug the Free Agent Frenzy show with yourself and Ryan Brandt tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And I think you'd agree, last weekend, especially day two of the 2018 NHL draft in Dallas, it was a little bit quiet on the trade front. It was about 12:30 p.m. when the Elias Lindholm, Noah Hanifin to Calgary for Michael Ferland and Dougie Hamilton trade broke. But aside from that, it was pretty quiet on the trade front. Because of that, are you expecting it to be a bit of a frenzy tomorrow?
I do. I think there's some pretty good names out there, guys, notwithstanding that John Tavares will take up a lot of time, and hopefully we know tomorrow where he's going to go, whether that's back to the island or if it's Dallas or Tampa. And the interesting thing for me when it comes to John Tavares, though, is I think some of these teams that were suitors in Los Angeles and going through this process are more tire kickers than anything else. I mean, Tampa doesn't have any cap space. And yes, it's a marketable place because there's no state tax and you can make millions of dollars more on $10 million over 7 years than you would in other places like San Jose and Toronto. But I don't know what you're going to do with the corresponding move. If you're Steve Yzerman, if you go out and get John Tavares, then everybody else knows that you've got to move somebody, and that's not exactly negotiating from a pillar of strength here when you're having a salary dump there, so people might take advantage of you. So in this process, I think there's more along the lines of at least a couple of tire kickers as opposed to guys that were really in on it to really go after John Tavares and thinking that they're going to get him. But maybe the process kind of helps when you go through it for the next time that you really want to get somebody that you're after. So that will be, I think, the biggest domino to fall tomorrow and then that trickle-down effect as we've talked about. But there's lots of names that are still out there. I mean, you know, certainly, I mean, Joe Thornton's still out there. And you look at James Van Riemsdyk is another name that I think people have interest in. And then, of course, the real deal, James Neal. Where does he end up? He would be a real good fit for somebody else as a depth forward, certainly on a contending team. So I do expect there's going to be a lot of movement tomorrow. There's going to be a lot of signings. I don't know if there'll be interchanges between teams, guys, in the trading department, but you never know. I mean, if we talk again about a team that has to maybe make a move to sign John Tavares, then, of course, there's going to be a corresponding move in terms of trying to move some salary out in order to absorb the salary that's coming in that John Tavares is going to command. So I expect in a roundabout way, that's going to be a fairly busy day tomorrow.
No, Paul, what did you think of the Joe Morrow signing? We know it's a more of a depth move, but still it was one that, you know, we all thought it was a little curious when he wasn't qualified by the team. And then, of course, the next day, Jets GM Kevin Cheveldayoff inked him to a one-year, $1 million deal.
I thought it was a great signing. I think that Joel Morrow was looking for a place to really spread his wings and be an NHL full-time player. And I think that he felt that he got that opportunity with the Winnipeg Jets, although he was just a little bit behind some people on the depth chart, and some of those people have been moved out already or their contracts will expire tomorrow, so he kind of moves up on that. I really like the way he skates. I really like the way he moves the puck. For a guy that wasn't touted as being a very physical defenseman, I thought that he got in the way enough of people to slow them down. That's sometimes when you're not the biggest body and you're playing defense and you can move the puck and you can skate, that's all you need to do. And I thought that he was pretty good down low in his own zone as well. So I think that when we were talking 2 years ago about the lack of depth on the left side for the Winnipeg Jets on the blue line, you know, you get this Simon Bourque kid now, left-handed shot. You've got Joe Morrow here now, a younger player not commanding a big salary. I think that Joe will probably push into one of the top seven roles here for the Winnipeg Jets this year, especially on that left side. Now you've got to get Morrissey done, but I really like the signing of Joe Morrow. I liked him as a player last year. He's a good guy as well. Always accommodating to the media, and I know that doesn't really count for anything. It's what you do on the ice.
It does for us.
But certainly when it comes to the depth that the Winnipeg Jets are trying to absorb and increase on their blue line, that move certainly does that for the Winnipeg Jets, especially with Toby Enstrom presumably out the door and maybe finishing his career elsewhere.
He's going to be anchoring tomorrow's coverage of the free agency frenzy along with broadcaster Ryan Brandt. He is the Winnipeg Jets voice here on TSN 1290. His name is Paul Edmonds. Paulie, thanks for this. We'll look forward to hearing you tomorrow from 10 to 2 here on the station.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime. Keep up the great work and enjoy another 2 hours and 15 minutes of programming.
Thank you, Paulie. Take care, buddy.
See you guys.
When we come back, we got more on the Jets, and we're going to start our free agency preview by taking a look at the Central Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Dallas, you're number five for me as well. I think, while you like the no state tax and some high-end talent, I don't think they're close enough to winning like some of the other teams. Fourth, New York Islanders. If you want to go back, you might get the most money. We know loyalty, comfort, the extra year all seems pretty attractive. You got a guy, Matt Barzal, who can help you for the next several years. They're number four.
TSN's Mike Johnson talking about the John Tavares sweepstakes. The Dallas Stars were one of the six finalists, but he's not too bullish on the chances of the Dallas Stars being the ultimate winner in trying to get John Tavares under contract.
Doesn't James Neal make sense in Dallas?
So no, he started his career in Dallas,
yes.
Right? He went from Dallas to Pittsburgh to Nashville to Vegas.
Just makes a lot of sense for me for James Neal. I realize a lot of teams are going to want to sign the real deal, but
I still hate that nickname.
Why?
I just because there's only one real deal, and it's Evander Holyfield.
Yeah, but this is the real deal of hockey.
Yeah, you can't have no. I disagree. I
just your nickname's
don't like it.
The Bear, and there are other guys nicknamed the Bear.
Nobody's called me the Bear in literally about 8 years.
We called you the Bear back in the Kick FM days.
I know, and that's been literally like 8 years ago. And since then, nobody has called me the Bear. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel.
I think I'm going to get it going again.
You do that there. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning. This segment brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at Zappia Group.
Drew, I know you want to get to the rest of the Central here and talk about Chicago and Nashville and St. Louis, Dallas, but, you know, you brought up a name, and I just put it out on Twitter. You know, we were talking about veteran backup goaltenders that the Jets might be able to sign now. Jonathan Bernier, he's expected to sign with Detroit. Mm-hmm. Cam Ward's expected to sign with Chicago. I don't know if the Jets have a lot of interest in bringing former Atlanta Thrashers draft pick Kari Lehtinen back. You threw out a name, Anton Khudobin. Makes a lot of sense. He had a really good year with the Boston Bruins. Mm-hmm. He used to play for the Carolina Hurricanes. Makes a lot of sense.
The ranks of the backup goaltenders are pretty thin. And certainly the Jets are in the market for a backup goaltender. I'd be shocked if it's Eric Comrie starting the year as the tandem with Connor Hellebuyck.
No. I think Eric Comrie spends one more year in the Moose.
I agree with you. I think it's a non-starter. I don't think the Jets organization has any interest in going that way.
Well, that's just a lot of youth. You know, you've got Connor Hellebuyck, who, again, admittedly, he's had a phenomenal year.
And Eric Comrie needs to play.
Yeah, well, and that's the other thing, is that there's no value. You can afford to have a guy who's a veteran backup sitting on the bench, mm-hmm. watching Connor Hellebuyck play, 80% of the games, and that's fine.
Well, but people forget, sorry, Dave, Eric Comrie's, 22 years old? I mean, he's still very young. 23 years old?
Yeah.
I mean, Eric Comrie is going to play in the NHL. He's already played in the NHL, but he's probably at least a couple of years away from being a full-time backup at the NHL level.
I mean, Anton Khudobin makes sense, and I think he's got some talent. A guy who had a bad year last year, he's playing on a terrible team, mind you, but has had some success previously, is Chad Johnson. He was with Buffalo last year. I mean, when he was with Calgary, which was only 2 years ago, a 2.59 goals against average and a .910 save percentage in 36 games. Those are, for a backup goaltender, those aren't terrible numbers.
You're looking for a backup goaltender who you can pay between $1 and $2 million a year, right?
Even going back 3 years ago, 2.36 goals against average and a .920 save percentage in 45 games for the Buffalo Sabres. So Chad Johnson's a guy that would not shock me. He has some experience having played in Western Canada with the Flames. So that's an option if Anton
another guy.
He's
sorry,
from Saskatoon again. Originally, so yep. Western Canadian ties.
Good Saskatchewan boy. Yeah,
Chad Johnson wouldn't be a guy who would shock me.
Yaro Halak, I agree. I mean, Chad Johnson, I'd be fine with because you know that Connor Hellebuyck's going to play 55 to 65 games next year, right?
Yeah.
So you're not bringing in a guy that you expect to play 30 games. You're expecting a guy to play somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 20 games, and that makes sense. Another guy that's been thrown out there that I don't think the Jets would be interested in is Yaro Halak. But because I just said that, they'll probably sign him.
No, I don't think they'd have any interest in Yaro Halak either. I mean, the two that I'm going to keep an eye on tomorrow, presuming that this gets done tomorrow, would be Chad Johnson and Anton Khudobin. I think that makes some sense to me from my perspective. We'll, of course, know more tomorrow when the free agency frenzy gets underway. Coverage here on TSN 1290 with Paul Edmonds and Ryan Brandt. Let's talk about the Central Division teams. We started off with a clip of the Dallas Stars. They're one of the finalists for John Tavares. Do you expect that the Dallas Stars, and I mean the Tavares watch continues, with apparently no news over the last really 24, 36 hours. It's, cone of silence surrounding John Tavares and his management group at CAA. Do you think, I don't mean the automobile industry, Creative Artists Agency is what they're called. Do you think that John Tavares to the Dallas Stars is a likely final destination, or do you think he's going to end up somewhere else? And what do you see the teams in the Central Division? Do you see them being especially active tomorrow in free agency?
Yeah, that's the $10 million a year question. That's probably what Tavares is going to get on his contract, $10 or $11 million a year, Drew. But of course it makes a lot of sense because you've got Tyler Seguin there as your number one center. But if John Tavares comes in there, you have two number one centers. Now, whether Tavares would be the number one center or Seguin would be the number one center, then you have the best two centers. Yeah. You talk about Mark Scheifele and Paul Stastny. If you've got Tyler Seguin and you've got John Tavares 1-2, you've got the best two centers in the game. I don't know if Dallas is going to be the ultimate destination. I'm leaning towards right now John Tavares staying with the New York Islanders.
Still.
Or probably if he doesn't go to the New York Islanders, number two for me is probably the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah,
I mean, the San Jose Sharks make a lot of sense if you're John Tavares, because we know that the Joe Thornton era, if it's not already coming to an end, hasn't already come to an end, it's coming to an end, 37, 38 years old.
He'll sign a one-year contract with San Jose, and he'll probably sign one-year contracts with San Jose for the rest of his career until he's done.
Yeah, and he's not going to play that much longer with all of his injury problems. He's probably got, 1 to 2 years left in the NHL, and that's nothing against Joe Thornton. I think he's a future Hall of Famer. But when you're talking about the San Jose Sharks, and you're looking at a team that obviously got ousted in the second round, but you're looking at Joe Pavelski, Logan Couture just signed a big contract. You've got Evander Kane there, Brent Burns, Mark Edward Vlasic. You've got a great goaltender in Martin Jones. I think San Jose makes a lot of sense to John Tavares, but I'm leaning towards him staying in Long Island.
Let me ask you this question, Dave. We're talking about the Central Division and free agency. The expectation is that Carter Hutton leaves St. Louis, and he goes, I mean, the rumor is Buffalo, a lot of interest in Carter Hutton. With him,
you're going to see a lot of, sorry, Drew, you're going to see a lot of goaltenders moved tomorrow, because you just mentioned Carter Hutton. We're expecting him to sign with Buffalo. Now they need a veteran backup. Maybe they want to acquire a guy like Anton Khudobin.
Lots of moving parts. But if you're St. Louis, mm-hmm. and you're a team that came right down to game number 82 last season when they lost to Colorado, and that's what didn't allow them to qualify for the playoffs. Jake Allen has had his ups and downs really through the entirety of his career. When he's good, he's very good. When he's bad, he's very bad. Are you comfortable in not having the quality backup that you had in Carter Hutton? Where would the St. Louis Blues have been last year if it wasn't for Carter Hutton, especially when Jake Allen was going through his struggles? That, to me, is a real big warning sign for the St. Louis Blues entering free agency.
Yeah, no, of course, and that's the whole point. That's what we've seen throughout the NHL world, is that you need to have an able-bodied backup who can step in. I mean, look at the Washington Capitals. There's no better example than the Washington Capitals. You had Brandon Holtby, who was having his own issues, similar to what they gave him a rest, if you will, and they said, we're going to give Grubauer the opportunity to step up. And look, Grubauer took Brandon Holtby. Nobody saw Brandon Holtby as not the number one goaltender mm-hmm. of the Washington Capitals earlier in the season. And then all of a sudden it became Grubauer's team. And then starting the playoffs with Grubauer and not Holtby for the first two games, obviously, that was unexpected. Now, similarly in St. Louis, you have Jake Allen, who had his own sort of issues. They had to give him some rest, some time away from the rink.
Yeah, mental health break.
Sure, of course. We saw it here against the Jets, right? So and they left him at home, came here, played without him. So the fact of the matter is, guys can bounce back from that. That's not something that, he signed for another 3 years, $4.35 million.
He's definitely their goaltender.
So he's their goalie. I think that they still have faith in them. I think that, you have to give, look at Connor Hellebuck. Everybody was like, well, he's not qualified. He goes and does his thing in the summer, really works on his game, and now he takes it to the next level. So there's always room for these guys, especially these elite guys, to do that sort of thing.
Dave, there's absolutely no doubt that Jake Allen is still the number one goaltender there, but as you mentioned, Drew, because they're going to lose Carter Hutton, I'd mm-hmm. be shocked if they didn't acquire a veteran backup goaltender. So whoever that is, I would expect the Blues to bring in
that guy. And if history is any indicator, they're going to have to rely on that player to actually play some decent time and to maybe really be a backstop of them when Jake Allen's going through one of his down periods. In any event, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Blues and the rest of the Central Division teams when free agency opens tomorrow morning. When we come back, we're going to be joined by John Mattis. He's the national hockey writer for thescore.com. Much more on free agency with John up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg.
Why is my Twitter feed full of bear gifs right now?
And a moose.
And a moose. Well, because you started talking about me being the bear, so Hustler tweeted a picture of me as a bear, and then Dave said hi to Hustler, and Hustler sent a picture of a moose to Dave because Dave is the moose insider, and I think it just really went off the rails at that point in time.
At no point was that a rational thought.
I word you no points.
Yes, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Welcome back to the program. Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg joined me in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
John Mattis joins us next on the program. John is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. He's a good friend of the program. John, good morning, and how are you?
Fellas, it's hot in Toronto. How are things in Winnipeg on this fine Saturday?
It is a hot Saturday morning here in Winnipeg as well. And
we're schwitzing here, John.
It's because the airflow in the studio isn't great. That's really the reason why. John, and we're 24 hours away from the start of the free agency frenzy, so you know that everyone's going to be at a fever pitch when that gets underway tomorrow morning, of course. Want to start with you, John, with the news of the day, which is, of course, involves the Winnipeg Jets here in trading Steve Mason and Joel Armia to the Montreal Canadiens. It's basically a straight salary dump. From your perspective, being in Toronto, does this mean that the Jets probably have a deal done with Paul Stastny to get him under contract and returning to the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, you would think so. This has been kind of floated out there for the last couple of weeks that the Winnipeg Jets are hot on Paul Stastny, and rightfully so, given how the playoff run went and him waiving his no move or no trade, I can't remember which, to come to Winnipeg in the first place around the deadline. And I think it worked really well for both teams. Like, it's kind of a lukewarm take on a trade when you say, you know, win-win. But I think, you know, the Canadians are getting Joel Armia, who's a pretty good, you know, a decent forward, a guy who has maybe a little more upside to bring to the table. And, you know, Mason gets off the books in Winnipeg. And $4.1 million for a backup, I think, in general, even if you're not talking about the Paul Stastny situation, I think in general, the Jets must have been just circling that on their salary cap chart and going, we need to get rid of this ASAP. So I would assume, I don't have the backroom intel, but I would assume that this paves the way to Stastny returning to Winnipeg. And I don't know if they have to make another move to free up even more space, because obviously he's going to command a fair amount of money, given, you know, his status and the Fraser market and the lack of centers out there. But this makes a lot of sense from a lot of perspectives. And I think Montreal also deserves some credit for getting two picks, Joel Armia, and if they buy out Steve Mason, then basically just, you know, taking on some salary, but not a ton. So it's a good deal. And you would assume that Stastny is coming back as a Jet.
John, you live in Toronto, you're based in Toronto, so we have to ask you, is LeBron James going to sign with the Toronto Raptors? Oops, sorry, this is a hockey show. Is John Tavares going to sign with the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yeah, first of all, I think LeBron James coming to Toronto, like, that's never going to happen. Let's get that out there. But that would be seismic. That's not, like, John Tavares is, I don't know where you want to put him in terms of the league and your ranking of the players, but let's just say, for argument's sake, your top 10 players. In the NHL, LeBron James is quite literally the best athlete in the entire world. You know, maybe Usain Bolt has something to say about that in his prime, but the megastar aura of LeBron James would just blow anything out of the water in terms of comparisons to other players signing here. But anyways, to get back to Tavares, yeah, it's looking like based on all the reports and you know, all the different situations and how, you know, the pros of this place, the cons of this place, it would make the most sense if it was between the Islanders, the Leafs, and the San Jose Sharks. I think all three provide different situations, different pluses, different subtractions. Like, you know, in Toronto, obviously you get the incredible young core that you can play with. You have the hometown team. That can be a good, that can be a bad. You know, if they end up winning a cup here, you're a hero forever. But if things go sideways, it's one of the last places you want to be when you're losing. And they also just hired one of his closest friends in the business in Wes Clark. Kyle Dubas announced, I believe it was yesterday, that he's rejoined the Leafs. He was previously with the Leafs in a development role. So, that's clearly not a coincidence. Another negative to Toronto is that high taxes compared to other places. But all in all, I mean, if you're Tavares, you're going, you know, me and Austin Matthews down the middle, that's a Crosby Malkin-esque situation that he would be able to just walk right into. So even though the Leafs would have a lot of issues with the salary cap, at least moving forward, maybe not in year one, I think Toronto makes a lot of sense, but also San Jose and old reliable New York also have their cases. So I, from my perspective and my calculation of the whole situation, in terms of what we know publicly and the type of guy that John Tavares is, I think that you give the slight edge to the Islanders at this point. Obviously, if we all wake up tomorrow and he hasn't signed with the Islanders, the chances of them signing him are pretty slim, given that they can no longer sign him to an 8-year deal. So, as of this moment in time, I think the Islanders have, like, you know, 1% higher chance than maybe the Leafs and the Sharks.
You know, John, we had the fortune of meeting Willie O'Ree at the draft in New Jersey. He was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. What is the significance of his induction?
Yeah, I wrote about this for the Score. I talked to a few people in the Black hockey community. It's one of those things where it's finally happened, and it was a long time coming. And, you know, breaking the color barrier, at least in terms of black players is such a massive moment in really hockey history, and it hadn't been officially recognized by the Hockey Hall of Fame until now. And you got the feeling that this was the year, because, you know, during Hockey is for Everyone month, he was trotted out there continuously. He was the face, the ambassador for the league, and they end up giving out an award in his name at the NHL Awards in Vegas. So, you know, that's the first annual award, so you think, okay, this is probably the year. I realize that the NHL and the Hockey Hall of Fame aren't technically linked, but it's just a watershed moment, because a lot of these black players, or even just, like, you know, black media or black fans, they've, you know, the road has been paved by guys like Willie O'Ree, where in the 50s, where society in general had problems with race and with sort of, it seems so archaic now, but with the, you know, segregation and all that stuff, he went through that, and he became a professional hockey player and broke the barrier. And then now guys like Wayne Simmonds, or, you know, Joe Ward, or whoever else in the NHL, while they still deal with issues, it's minimized. And I'm not trying to downplay what they deal with, but, you know, you think back to the 50s, and it was a whole different ballgame in terms of race relations. So the fact that Willie O'Ree is finally in the Hall, it doesn't change the way that society deals with these situations and deals with race in general, but it's sort of symbolic, and it means that finally the Hockey Hall of Fame has come around to the idea that, hey, maybe we should be recognizing, you know, cultural builders, or whatever you want to call Willie O'Ree. It doesn't matter that he only played 45 games in the NHL. He did something very significant, and you got to sort of throw a bone to certain members of your community, and whether that's, you know, women's hockey or maybe some other, you know, sledge hockey, whatever it ends up being, these little pockets of the hockey community that are sometimes forgotten about. I think this is a step in the right direction for the Hall of Fame, sort of moving towards more diversity, and that's great to see.
John Mattis is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. John is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. John, the Vegas Golden Knights were, of course, the great story last year, making all the way to the Stanley Cup Final. David Perron had 66 points. James Neal had 44 points. Combined, they had 41 goals between the both of them. They both are unrestricted free agents, and they both seem like they're not going to be back with Vegas after tomorrow's free agency period opens up. Is that a huge loss to the Golden Knights roster that really no one's talking about?
I don't know. I'd say it's safer for them to steer clear of any sort of long-term deals or throwing money at these veteran players. Like, they're both 30 years old. They've both proven them to be, you know, 40. You know, in Perron's case, he's always produced about 40 to 60 points. This year, I guess his career year, I believe, 66. And then if you look at Neal, you know, 20 to 30 to 40 goals. It depends on the year and if he's injured and whatnot. These guys are 30. They're probably not going to age well, considering they've both dealt with injuries. Considering the, like, as we talked about off the top, like, this free agent crop isn't great, so you're overpaying for absolutely everyone. And I think if you're the Vegas Golden Knights and you look at the team that you assembled through the expansion draft and the prospects that you have, and just looking at the big picture, I don't know if those guys are worth, you know, hitching your wagon to, because although they have a ton of cap space, you know, you want to go after the Erik Karlssons, and you want to go after these big names while you're still, you know, the hot commodity of the NHL, where you had this incredible story and, you know, this great fan base and everything's going in your favor. I don't know if, you know, signing one of those two guys is a smart call when you should be focusing your money on Shea Theodore, on, you know, Jonathan Marchessault. He's already locked up, but just the younger players and your prospects. And I would say if they sign one of them, it's not the end of the world. But if they go all in and you know, devote, I don't know, 10 to 12 million to two of these guys, I don't know if that's really the right call.
John, final question for you here. It was announced yesterday that defenseman Drew Doughty and the LA Kings have agreed to an 8-year, $88 million contract extension, which is going to keep Drew Doughty a member of the Kings for probably the rest of his career. What were your thoughts on that contract, the potential impact it could have on Erik Karlsson, and just how awesome it is that number 8 signed an 8-year deal for $88 million?
Yeah, he took a page out of Sidney Crosby's book. I believe signed for $87 million, you know, a few years back. But Yeah, this really sets the bar for Erik Karlsson, whether he gets traded before he becomes a free agent or whether he never becomes a free agent and just signs with either the Senators or his new team. $11 million, at least a reported $11 million, is the bar because Doughty and Karlsson are seen as either equals or close to equals. It depends on who you talk to. So it's huge for Doughty. It's huge for the Kings. And Karlsson, it gives him a spot to start at. And I don't think it's not like, you know, the Kings are giving him a hometown or Doughty's giving the Kings a hometown discount. I think it's a pretty substantial contract, bringing him up to, you know, McDavid's level and some other stars around the league like Taves and Kane. So he's now in the upper echelon. And I think that Karlsson deserves to be in that conversation as well in terms of earnings. And also sort of a side plot is that this LA Kings team, like I realize that Doughty signing there was kind of a foregone conclusion and he's still young-ish, but if you look at their roster, their core is so heavily reliant on veterans, mm-hmm. a lot of guys in their 30s. So even though this is an 8-year deal, I think that their window is actually quite tight and they need to, you know, you see with the Ilya Kovalchuk signing, that they need to really hone in on the next 2-3 years as, you know, their last chance of really winning a Stanley Cup again with this core of Kopitar and, you know, I don't know if you want to throw in Phaneuf and those types of players, Dustin Brown. There's a lot of guys over 30, Jonathan Quick. So as much as Doughty's going to be around past that, they have this window here where they really need to figure things out, get back in the playoffs, and push for a cup.
John Mattis is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. He's a good friend of the program.
Congrats, John, on the new gig, by the way, John.
Yeah,
thanks,
congrats.
Guys. Really appreciate it.
John, thanks for joining us this Saturday morning, and look forward to all the frenzy that'll get started in about 24 hours' time.
Yeah, enjoy the long weekend, guys. Cheers.
You too, John. Take care. When we come back, we shift our focus to the Pacific Division, talk about the free agents that are coming out of that division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Number one for me is San Jose. Listen, if you spend 2 years planning to sign me, I got to give you a lot of credit.
They got I love that, MJ.
They got a ton of money to spend. You got a good team that will be available for a few years. They got a goaltender, defense, and a culture of winning. They're right there, and he might help push them over top. He'd be my number one choice.
More for Mike Johnson predicting that John Tavares might end up with the San Jose Sharks. At least that would be where he would go if he was John Tavares. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Port Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
You wonder if Keener Jerseys is going to be making some Toronto Maple Leafs jerseys, maybe with Tavares on the back, or maybe the San Jose Sharks, or maybe the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Or the Dallas Stars, or the Boston Bruins, or the New York Islanders. That's it.
I kind of enjoy how this is gone, though, I have to say. It's been like LeBron. It's not as dramatic as LeBron making the decision. But
taking his talent to South
Beach.
Yeah,
you know, like I kind of like it. You know, Arthur Staple, who we're going to have on in about 10 minutes,
yeah,
was talking about how, you know, he feels the list is down to 3 now from the 6 originally.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're whittling. John Tavares is handing out some roses. And so far, it looks like the Islanders, right, Leafs, and Sharks have it.
Yeah, Ezzy's the Bachelor guy. So,
aren't you impressed that
I'm actually married.
No, I know, but you watch The Bachelor.
I'm actually more into The Bachelorette now.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Josh Cooper's on the program because I don't care.
And neither do I.
Yeah, exactly.
What about the new show, The Proposal?
I don't know. I don't care. Let's talk about let's start with Drew Doughty. 8 years, $88 million.
You just want to talk about Drew Doughty because he shares your name.
That's true. He gets $11 million on an AAV. That's going to become effective July 1st. That's when he can sign it. It's a lot of money. Drew Doughty's, you know, probably if not the best defenseman in the NHL, then a top 3 defenseman in the NHL.
I think he's the best defenseman.
So the Kings have to sign it, but it's one of those contracts where, I mean, you sign it and you say okay, but you wonder what the future of the LA Kings is in terms of a Stanley Cup contender.
Well, Drew Doughty is your future.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he's your cornerstone piece. He's your most valuable player. And that's saying a lot when you've got Andre Kopitar, who was just nominated for the most valuable player, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, Andre Kopitar is very valuable to the LA Kings. But Drew Doughty, I mean, those two Stanley Cups that you won, you don't win those cups without Drew Doughty. You obviously don't win those cups without Andre Kopitar or Jonathan Quick or Jeff Carter or probably Marian Gaborik even. But, I mean, Drew Doughty, Drew, we can all agree, at the very least, is a top three defenseman in the league. And he's in his prime right now. I think people forget sometimes the LA Kings have been criticized a lot for kind of holding on to being that heavy team, that veteran team that relies a little bit too much on that kind of physical grinding style of play. And they've moved away from that a little bit over the last few years. And, you know, players like Tyler Toffoli and Tanner Pearson have struggled a little bit with their offense, and they expected more from those players. But a guy like Jeff Carter, he's had injury problems, and that really hurt the LA Kings. But, I mean, the LA Kings, we knew that they were going to sign Doughty, and we knew it was going to be somewhere around $10 million a year, $11 million a year. It ends up being $11 million a year. And, you know, if you're Rob Blake, you're obviously going to pay him that.
Yeah.
Because he's worth it.
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue that he's worth $12 million or $13 million a year. He's that good. He's a future Hall of Famer. Yes. And I am already talking about him being a future Hall of Famer because he is that good.
Yeah. There's no question about it. I mean, it's just one of those things where you look at the LA Kings roster and it's old. I mean, it's an old roster that they're paying a lot of money to guys who are certainly on what I'll describe as the latter parts of their career.
Well, and Ilya Kovalchuk falls in that category, right, Drew? And you know, we kind of talked about it last week when we were on air for the second round through seventh round of the 2018 draft in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about, you know, could L.A. be one of those teams that's in on John Tavares? And obviously they're not one of those teams, the San Jose Sharks, their California neighbor, are a potential landing spot for Tavares. But if I'm Rob Blake, I have to be in the market for another top six forward and a top four defenseman. And I realize that the Kings brought in Dion Phaneuf, and, you know, he had varying degrees of success there in a short time in L.A., but after Drew Doughty and Jake Muzzin, the Kings are pretty thin on defense.
Yeah, I mean, they're thin everywhere.
Alec Martinez is a good defenseman. You know, he's still a decent defenseman. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, that defense, it's not as good as it was back in, 2015 when they won their last Stanley Cup, or 2014, whenever it was.
They're just remarkably top-heavy is what it boils down to. Dave, the Arizona Coyotes, they're rumored to be in on David Perron. They're rumored to be in on even James Neal, potentially ahead of the free agency tomorrow. Sounds like they're going to sign both Oliver Ekman Larson and Nicholas Chalmerson to contract extensions. The Arizona Coyotes, to me, are a bit of a sleeper team in that might be, you know, getting ready to make a move out of the absolute bottom of the basement in terms of the NHL, and they could really add to their roster with some of the moves they make tomorrow, while at the same time hurting a division rival in the Vegas Golden Knights. I hate to disagree with John Mattis, but and I know that the core of the Golden Knights isn't James Neal and David Perron. But you take 110 points off any roster.
It's a lot of points.
It's a lot of points.
Yeah.
It's an impactful loss.
Well, Perron and Neal, that's two-thirds of your second line.
That's right.
Right?
And so, yeah, they're journeymen, and yeah, they bounce around a little bit, but you take that many points off any team, and it's going to be hard to replace it just that easily.
Yeah, and Arizona is one of those young and up-and-coming teams, and we've seen them, you know, become a kind of a salary dumping ground for the last few years. But I think they're at the point now where they've transitioned into a team that's ready to start going for it. And we saw that with the trade for Ranta with the Rangers last year and acquiring him as their number one goaltender. Giving, you know, OEL to, you know, the idea that he's going to be the captain for the long term in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And really, this is going to be his team. And they've, you know, made a lot of moves to make him more comfortable there. And again, they've got that young group. They've, you know, they made a nice acquisition in their trade with Montreal. So to me, Arizona is one of those teams that seems to be on the rise. Now, the problem with that is that we've been talking about that for how many years?
Well.
But it finally seems like they've turned that corner. Now, they've got some older forwards, and they're not the fastest. So that's one thing we talk about in today's NHL is how team speed is so critical to the game. So that is one area they may have to improve upon, but I don't see them being super active in free agency.
Ezzy, let me ask you guys this question. I'll ask both of you guys this question. If John Tavares ends up signing with the San Jose Sharks, and by all accounts they're going to sign Logan Couture to a contract extension on July 1st as well, because that's when he's 1 year away from unrestricted free agency, the earliest they can do so. Are the San Jose Sharks the Stanley Cup favorite next season if they sign John Tavares, if they get Tavares' name under a contract?
Favorite?
Favorite. With Martin Jones in net, with Brent Burns and Mark Edward Vlasic on the back end.
I don't know if they're the Stanley Cup favorite, but they definitely become one of the top Stanley Cup contenders, I'll say that much. And, you know, it was only back in 2016 when the San Jose Sharks went all the way to the final against the Penguins. Obviously, they didn't end up winning the Cup. But, yeah, they become one of the favorites. I still think the Winnipeg Jets are right up there as one of the Stanley Cup favorites. I got to think that the Nashville Predators are still up there. It's still the Jets and the Predators. Those two teams are still the best two teams in the league as far as I'm concerned. Not much has changed, especially if the Jets sign Paul Stastny to a multi-year contract, which we expect the Jets to sign Stastny to that contract. So I still think the Jets and the Predators are the two best teams, and I think the Lightning might be up there, the Bruins, but if they can land John Tavares...
Look what it does to the center ice depth.
Well, exactly. You got Joe Pavelski.
Yeah.
You got Logan Couture.
Yeah.
And you've got John Tavares. And also, by the way, Logan Couture is a guy that can play on the wing as well.
Yeah.
And Pavelski's played on the wing at times, too. But
let's
the point
assume
is...
you go up the middle with Pavelski, Couture, and Tavares in no particular order.
And you've got Evander Kane there.
Yeah.
Thomas Hertl, he's a good young player. I mean, we know they're still set on the back end with Brent Burns and Mark Edward Vlasic, Justin Braun. You mentioned Martin Jones is a great number one goaltender. They definitely become the best team in the Pacific, in my opinion.
Yeah, in the Pacific for sure. But it changes the dynamic. It changes the expectations. And we'll know probably in about 24 hours, maybe a little less, maybe a little more, where John Tavares ends up. When we come back, Arthur Staple knows John Tavares better than basically anybody in the media. He's covered the New York Islanders for years. First with Newsday, now with TheAthletic.com, Arthur joins us to talk about the John Tavares sweepstakes and the Islanders offseason. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.